And as a consequence of that, one of the ways in which they dealt with it was to see to the expulsion of 700,000 people from their cities, from their towns and villages, and the destruction of all of them, which, to his credit, Ari Shavit writes about very painfully and honestly.
Henry Siegman, president of the U.S. Middle East Project. He's the former executive director of the American Jewish Congress, as well as the Synagogue Council of America. He recently wrote a piece for Politico headlined, "Israel Provoke This War." We'll link to it at democracynow.org. Tune in tomorrow for part two of our conversation with Rabbi Henry Siegman, where he talks about U.S. support for Israel and U.S. media coverage. By the way, Democracy Now! Has a job opening. We have an opening for an on-air graphic designer and CG operator. Visit democracynow.org for more information. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Aaron Mate, Steve Martinez, Sam Malkoff, Hani Massoud, Rabbi Karen, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, Julie Crosby, Hugh Grand, Jessica Lee, John Wallach, Investa Godars, as well as our camera crew, John Randolph, Kieran Craig Meadows, Carlo DeJesus, and Phil Raymond. Our website is democracynow.org. You can check there for transcripts, video, and audio podcasts. I'm Mimi Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:01. Coming up next is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio with our host, Linda Olson-Osterlin. Today's guest is Professor Zahir Wahab, who will fill us in on the latest developments in the war in Afghanistan.
We're now approaching Newport, Rhode Island.
KBOO and the Clinton Street Theater are proud to present one of the great concert films of all time, Jazz on a Summer's Day, a documentary of the 1958 Newport Jazz Festival. Jazz on a Summer's Day captures the music, the crowd, and the essence of such jazz greats as Louis Armstrong, Thelonious Monk, Jerry Mulligan, and Anita O'Day. Jazz on a Summer's Day, Thursday, August 14, 7 p.m., at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street, Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Old rocking chair's got me.
Old rocking chair got your father.
Between 2008 and 2013, Oregon legislators were flooded with money from political action committees that wanted to see state workers' rights curtailed. Add to that business-friendly language and boilerplate bills that were only slightly changed before they were introduced, and you get a recipe for disaster for public employees and the middle class. Join KBOO on Thursday, the 31st of July at 5:45 as we present the fourth in our series of reports on the influence of the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, and the Public Worker. Thursday, the 31st of July at 5:45 p.m. right after the KBOO Evening News.
This program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Gazelle Natural Fiber Clothing and Full Circle Resale, featuring women's clothing, jewelry, and accessories with a focus on natural fibers since 1984. Gazelle and Full Circle Resale are both located at the corner of Northeast 41st and Fremont and at Gazelle Natural Fiber Clothing.
This KBOO program has also been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Grendel's, a neighborhood coffee house offering organic coffee, sandwiches for breakfast and lunch, and Wi-Fi. Proud to support KBOO, Grendel's is open every day at East Burnside and 8th. Information at 503-595-9550 or facebook.com/Grendel's Coffee House.
Articulate their message and together make a toast to the new schemes they're hatching, to the next regime they'll change. newspapers and TV. The anarchists who come and destroy the city. The anarchists who come and the undercover cops. The old Chicago Red Squad and their psyops. It's the cops who bought the petrol. The cops who bought the cans. The cops who brought it home. The cops who made the plan so they got the terrorists they wanted. Now they're doing fine. They got the terrorists and they got the headlines.
Good morning. This is Linda Olson Osterlin for KBOO, and that was Dave Rovix and his song Meanwhile in Afghanistan in an album of the same name. I want to thank you all for tuning in today for Wednesday Talk Radio. I've got a guest here, Professor Zahir Wahab. We're talking about Afghanistan, that war that can often get overlooked in the number of conflicts going on right now. And we're going to my intention is to have you, the listener, be able to be you, the speaker, as well. I want to hear as many of you as possible to call. So that number to call to get on the air and talk with Professor Wahab and express yourself about Afghanistan, ask your questions, and give your opinion is 503-231-8187. That's 503-231-8187 to call and get on the air. And my guest, let me tell you a little bit more about him. It's Professor Zahir Wahab. He was born in Afghanistan, but as he got to a young adult, he was educated in, it looks like, the University of Beirut.
American University of Beirut.
And yeah. Then in Stanford, and then and got his PhD and came to Lewis and Clark and really found a home here in the Pacific Northwest at Lewis and Clark, and there he devised and designed many different programs on educating other educators, and including working with international students and working in foreign programs, and a tremendous amount of work, and spent 40 years here in Portland doing that. Well, here and around the world, actually, as he traveled to do those kinds of work. In the last 10 years, he's retired from, well, he retired just a few years ago, but he's been going back to Afghanistan, his original home, and he's been working in Afghanistan to be an educator of educators. Education is so important for all young people, and it's got so much trouble there that he's decided to devote himself to that. And so he trains young men and women from Afghanistan to become teachers. It's a great job. He's working with the American University in Afghanistan right now. So welcome to KBOO again.
Thank you, Linda. Thank you for having me here.
Many of you might have heard, as I did last week, you were on an interview with Per Fogren, one of our other hosts, and it made me really want to open up the airwaves to our listeners, because I think it's incredibly important that you engage with this topic of Afghanistan. With so many conflicts, it falls to the background, and yet there's so much going on there. So I want to let you know again, our number is 503-231-8187. And so, Zahir, before we have any callers, we don't have any right now, let's tell us a little bit about what you do, your job in Afghanistan.
I have been going back since very early 2002. I had a full-time job here at Lewis and Clark College, and I received a call just 2 or 3 months after the Taliban were ejected from power in October, November of 2001. And I received a call from the Minister of Higher Ed to if I could help. I happened to be free that semester, so I started going back in early 2002. And since then, have been spending 1 or 2 semesters every year in Afghanistan, first as an advisor to the Ministry of Higher Education for about 6 years, and then the last 6 or 7 years as a professor at Kabul University and also at Kabul Education University, essentially working with teacher education faculty. And then this late last year and early this year, I sort of got roped into and lured into the American University of Afghanistan, a university that is was founded 6 years ago, and I had something to do with it. And it's sort of growing and developing. And right now, I am teaching in a program, and also I'm directing a program for 320 instructors from teacher training academies from throughout the country. There are people from
every single... So you're working with people who are teaching other teachers.
Who will be training teachers, elementary, middle, and high school teachers. And these are usually younger people. They're in their late 20s. But also to point out, there's an incredible demand and need for quality education and quality instructors. And only 5% or so of the Afghan professors have PhDs, and another 35% masters. But the vast majority only have bachelor's degrees. Teaching at universities.
So there's a real gap compared to other countries.
Enormous gap. And, although there has been quantitatively, there has been progress in Afghan education at all levels, but quality is suffering and there's very little attention being paid to quality. But the other reason is that, frankly, I sort of given up on the people who are currently in power and have been in power, regardless of their garb and whether they have beards or not. But the people who have been in power, they're the same people who have been around as warlords, strongmen, or American or Western lackeys and so forth. And my hope is that if we could educate enough new people who will become the future leaders in the country, that might rescue the country from itself and from foreigners.
Well, it certainly sounds like an important component of rescuing the country. In my promotional air commercial, basically, for this show, I said our 9/11 bomb them back to the Stone Ages war. I described Afghanistan as that war, and I did it on purpose because the pictures that come out of there look like a surface of the moon or something.
Yes.
You can see pictures from the past before the 80s and 70s even, where it was much different there and much more beautiful. And so in the midst of what looks like it being stoned back to the, bombed back to the Stone Ages, how do these educators fit in? Where do they find their roles? And, where do they go to teach?
It's very difficult. There is, the Afghan Constitution guarantees free education from first through grade through college. But because the government itself has very few resources, human, material, financial, and physical resources, so education is very underdeveloped. For example, it is estimated only 1% of the college-age students are in college. This is a very young 1%. Country, Linda, where only, two-thirds of the population are under 25.
Wow, I didn't realize it.
It's a very young country, which really means unless something is done very quickly in terms of development, education, healthcare, food, income, jobs, and so forth, that the country will explode. And in some ways, there are minor explosions going on. And there's an explosion of private education. For example, 5 years ago, there was hardly any private institution. Now there are 85 private institutions of higher learning. The same with schools.
Who is starting these?
Anybody. Yeah, you can rent a building and start a for-profit school or a kindergarten or a university or even a master's degree program. My worry now is that there's an expansion and an explosion of education, both private and public, but very little attention is paid to the quality. For example, a school day for public school kids consists of 2.5 hours a day because, for one, half of the schools still don't have buildings. The other half have to operate 2 or 3 shifts, which means you have a very shortened, truncated school day and school year with all the holidays and closures. Right now, all of the universities, private and public in Afghanistan, are closed. They have been closed since June 16th because of these elections, the so-called elections, and the uncertainties around the results of the elections. So the government decided to close all the schools except my program at the American University of Afghanistan, which is a program for 320.
How did you manage that?
We convinced them because our students, the 320 students, are actually, they all have their bachelor's degrees, and they are teaching in teacher training academies, two-year teacher training academies. And we said, you know, 320 people, that's a lot of people to be away from their jobs because they're supposed to go back to their jobs next March. And also that we will guarantee that there will be no trouble emanating from this particular program of the American University. And so the Ministry of Higher Education was wise enough to allow us to continue. But to go back to the earlier question, the you know, the death and destruction continues.
Let me get to this one point I wanted to make. And by the way, the number, if you want to call and get in on this conversation, is 503-231-8187. I'd very much like to hear from you what your concerns, what your interests are about Afghanistan, what you think we should be doing as, you know, intelligent American citizens about that war. Is there anything you think that we can do? So please do call in. I want to bring up the cost of the war because, you know, you talk about the Afghan government having very little money and very little money for buildings and for the
anything.
Infrastructure. And yet, when I look at, these are numbers that I got off the web from a place called costsofwar.org, and they're government numbers, actually. And it looks like we've spent officially on the war there. We're not talking about any of the expenses here or with our veterans here or anything like that. $718.6 billion on Afghanistan alone. When you take in Pakistan and Iraq, over $4.3 trillion has been spent on it. So we know that tons of money, and we've heard stories about one of Karzai's brother leaving the country with millions of dollars in cash. Is it a failure of the United States to give enough aid, or is it a some other kind of failure that ends up in development money not getting to developments?
Well, I think, I'm in my position, as you know, I have been going back every year for the last 13 years. And I have actually witnessed directly security, you know, death and destruction, you know, so-called development activities. There's very little of that happening, and I would say that it was not just a failure of nerves or a failure of imagination on the part of the United States and its allies. At one point, remember, there were troops from some 50 different countries in Afghanistan. Now their numbers is being reduced, but I don't think the United States or the West will ever really abandon Afghanistan. So there are a couple of problems. One, that the priority has always been to defeat the insurgency and eliminate Al-Qaeda and Taliban, and there are no Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan.
There are no Al-Qaeda anymore at all.
They don't mention that, do they? You know, in shadows. But the Taliban are an integral part of the Afghan society, just like other people. And it's not just 1,000 Talib war, and there are millions and millions of people who actually believe, you know, are very, you know, they believe in a different social, economic, political order. But because the priority was counterinsurgency and in defeating or eliminating the Taliban, which they haven't done in the Al-Qaeda, there was very little attention paid to development, quote-unquote. For example, you pointed out the $800 billion.
Let's leave it right there. There was very little spent on that because we do have a caller. I'd like to get that caller on. Thomas, you're on the air.
Yes. Hello. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for calling.
Yes, it's an honor to be able to speak with Professor Wahab.
Thank you.
I admire your very important work. I have a few comments and questions relating to where we go from here, or where not we, but where Afghan people go from here as far as, you know, you were mentioning all of the billions of dollars that have been poured into Afghanistan by the United States and its European allies largely. And of course, you know, as you have and many others have spoken, you know, much of this money has gone to essentially in the form of ultimately payoffs to armed groups and warlords for essentially ephemeral, you know, political reasons and so forth. And
yes.
I think that if you look at any of the development indexes that are known for Afghanistan, over 10 years of occupation, it kind of belies any claim that a central motivation of the Western interests are to develop Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
also, you know, I mean, we go back to 1979 in the Carter administration, where we know that Zbigniew Brzezinski, who was a national security advisor to Carter, was one of the chief architects of a CIA operation known as Cyclone, which of course had the key purpose of destabilizing the secular Soviet allied Afghan government at the time. So my question is that we're looking and we see that through time that clearly the interests of the West, the dominant political interest, has not been stable secular governments and development of the country, but rather I leave it to others to determine
yes.
what the true goals are. But let me ask you this, sir. Now we see that Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, the so-called BRICS countries,
yes.
are creating a bank or in the process.
They have. They did. Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
A bank that actually is to sort of act as a counterpoint to the World Bank and IMF, which have been very notorious for funding projects that are inimical to actual core development. People,
yeah.
do you think that going forward, I mean, particularly now that we see that recent studies have indicated that in fact Afghanistan is among other things a very mineral rich country, including
yes.
perhaps the largest known deposit of lithium,
yes.
which is a key material for high technology. Is it not possible that going forward that that countries such as the BRICS countries and others
mm-hmm.
might be more natural and balanced allies for Afghanistan going
yeah.
forward, and that perhaps there may be a shift of influence going forward? Do you mm-hmm. think that's possible or likely?
Right.
I'd like to hear a comment.
Yeah,
here.
Well, I agree with your analysis so far, and that is that the main objective really wasn't to, quote, develop Afghanistan, to bring peace, prosperity, democracy, liberation of women, you know, stability and so forth, and the elimination of drugs to Afghanistan. I never really believed that because, in fact, that has not happened. So, for example, Afghanistan's economy, in spite of the fact that about $50 billion have been allocated to, quote, development, and yet 90% of the government's budget depends on foreign sources. As we speak, the government can only generate 10% of its $7 billion budget per year. And the same, for example, a country that is essentially an agrarian society but is a net importer of food, which is to say that very little has been done on agriculture, where 70% of the people live off of agriculture and the land. The same with education, for example. So as we speak, about 65% of the men and 90% of the women are illiterate. 90% and 65%.
I was going to ask. I knew the numbers were not good. That's
so,
an outrage.
In other words, and then the most recent thing, intervention. So, and of course, we're not really safer either in Portland or in Dubai or in Afghanistan or any place else. This idea of defeating the insurgencies or the Al-Qaeda, of which they are, I think the United States' involvements, and not just in Afghanistan, but all over the world, from Syria to Iraq to Lebanon to Yemen to Somalia to other places, we have created problems. So So the American foreign intervention and its particular its occupation and invasion of Afghanistan has really sort of boomeranged, you know, the blowback. We continue to experience it as we speak. Money goes and money gets out. Every day it's estimated that about $10 million leave the Kabul airport, and that's one airport alone. You know, very little of the money that goes into Afghanistan in the name of development actually is spent on development and stays there. As you point out, it goes to criminals and warlords and contractors, third country nationals, et cetera, et cetera. And that's why Kabul, the capital city, still does not have a sewer system. It doesn't have an effective traffic light system. It does not have adequate drinking water or electricity. And this is the capital, you know, in the year 2014. So you wonder where the development is. You know, the same with education, the same with, you know, the statistics are just incredible. You know, more than half of the people are hungry. They're underemployed, for example. And when you ask people in surveys what they consider to be the main problems facing the country, they would point out actually to lack of security, and unemployment, lack of work, and poverty. So very little has been done in that area. I think what needs to be done is, you know, I don't for a moment believe that the United States and its allies, in terms of NATO and other countries, have the intention of leaving Afghanistan. As you know, the discussion now is, will there be 10,000 Americans left or 15,000, and what they will be doing? And the point, we also have to point out that the U.S. is very busy finishing up 9 different bases in Afghanistan. It's also finishing up the second largest ministry of defense next to the Pentagon. You know, and the Pentagon being the largest ministry in the world, the Afghan ministry is going to be the largest. So everything points out in the direction that a continued military occupation, and the United States most recently intervened in the political election, and that is when the people voted. 8 million people voted on April 5th, and then no winner emerged, and then it went to second round on June 16th. And, you know, they're bickering about as to who might win, who, what happened, and what kind of a fraud. And John Kerry went there and imposed a new model of what he calls a government of national unity, which is to say more of the same. Because Afghanistan has had a government of, quote, national unity, where all sorts of criminals from different ethnic, religious, linguistic, and regional groups divided the power and privileges and money amongst themselves, and the people continue to suffer. In that document, which was drafted by Kerry just 2 weeks ago, a week and a half ago, you know, about the election, is sitting in the U.S. embassy. No one is allowed, no Afghan is allowed to have access to it. The short answer is the United States has deliberately underdeveloped this country, just like a lot of other countries in the world, just like the way we have underdeveloped Central America, and now their children are coming here to haunt us. The same thing is happening in Afghanistan. What should be done is smart, intelligent, indigenized intervention by the West. If they really want to develop Afghanistan, they should intervene, you know, in terms of money, ideas, technical assistance, technology, in a very smart, in egalitarian way, and let the Afghans decide for themselves.
We have another caller. I want to thank you, Thomas, for your call. We didn't get to the part about whether we could get BRIC money in there. I wonder if the United States would allow those kind of agreements. But we do have another caller, and I'd like to get them on the air. LJ. Thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning, Linda. Good to hear you back on the air.
Yeah, thank you.
Hi, Professor Wahab. I know you just got back from Afghanistan.
Thank you. Hi, how are you?
Recently, it's very good to hear you. Just a question that's been bothering me for quite a long time. I know that the opium poppy production in Afghanistan is a very, very important part of the economy.
A third of the economy, yes.
Right. So can you give our KBOO family a little insight in excuse me, can you give us a little insight into that?
Yes.
That would be much appreciated. And Linda, if I can make an announcement on your show.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. On Friday, August 1st, the Elder Caucus of Occupy is going to be hosting Peter Miller, the president of Americans United for Palestinian Human Rights, mm-hmm. and co-chair of the U.S. campaign to end the Israeli occupation. And we're going to be having a discussion, and it's going to be from, Peter Miller will be there from 3 to 4, and it's at the American Friends Service Committee mm-hmm. Meeting hall on 43rd and Stark. And everybody is welcome.
And this please, is, please attend give the date again.
This conversation.
Give August the date 1st. Again. August 1st. First,
yeah. August 1st.
Okay, great. And at 43rd at the, great.
At 43rd and Stark.
Yeah. All right, great. Thank you,
okay,
LG.
Great. Yeah. Thank you so much yeah. for taking my call. Right. Have a really good day.
Yeah. Well, thank right. you very much. This is a very important issue because this year, according to the UN reports and everybody else, Afghanistan actually has produced the largest amount of opium over the last 12, 13 years, and it continues to supply 90 to 95% of the world's heroin. But also the side effect, of course, is that now we have about 1.5 to 2 million Afghans who are addicted to drugs. And there are reasons for that, because no attention has been paid to legitimate agriculture, a society which at one point, in the 70s, was entirely self-sufficient in food, is now a net importer of food. Because, no one paid any attention to agriculture. And the land either has been concentrated in fewer hands or has been subdivided and fragmented in many, many hands. And there have been droughts, the land needs to be cultivated. The underground irrigation canals, because of the war and the disruptions, have been abandoned and dried up. And the water level is going down, and the surface water is leaving the country. The United States has not built a single dam, to generate electricity and to irrigate land. So legitimate, useful agriculture has been neglected, abandoned, and degraded. But people have to make a living. And so poppies, are very easy to maintain, and it requires very little money, water, but also there's a huge demand for it, throughout the world. So this year, unfortunately, again, it's 7,000 or 8,000 tons of poppies. And as I said, the side effect is that, unfortunately, you see this in Kabul, you see them everywhere. Men, women, children, good people, bad people have become addicted, and the government simply is not able to cope with this problem. It doesn't have the resources. And in terms of the economy, it's considered to be about a third of the GDP. Imagine the country has $19, $20 billion GDP, and one third of that is the drug industry. So it is a very big problem. As to your other point, the BRICS, they just recently concluded a meeting in where they established a $100 billion sort of the counterforce to IMF and the World Bank. And Afghanistan is going to be made a member of the so-called Shanghai Cooperation Organization, which really is sort of the counterforce to NATO, because NATO is encroaching on these other countries like Russia, India, and so forth. They were forced to sort of constitute the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, and Afghanistan has been an observer member, but my understanding is it's going to be made a genuine member. The same would go for the BRIC.
So this would have the possibility of actual competition for funds for Afghanistan. So if you had a project in Afghanistan you wanted to bring into fruition, you might have some resource other than the U.S. and NATO.
Yes, and in fact, if you look at the situation on the ground, the Chinese have made the largest investment in terms of a contract on the so-called Ainak copper contract for $4 billion. And when there's work done, the small projects is done by the Indians or the Turks. or the Iranians in some ways, or the Chinese. The Russians are now helping with providing some military hardware and police training and intelligence. But the United States, on the other hand, has been very busy on death and destruction.
Yes, bent on death and destruction.
Yes, that's where most of our attention, most of our resources have gone. And I might point out that civilian casualties this year, according to the UN, have been the highest so far of the last 13 years.
Yes, we'll mention that again. I do have some statistics on that. And we do have another caller, so I'd like to get them on. Joanne, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hello. I have a question, but you know what I've been realizing? That's how leaders of the world can control us, is by having addicted people of all kinds, and so that's one way of controlling us. One of my questions is, they're using, I understand, drones in Gaza. Mm. Are they using them in Afghanistan? And also one more. Are countries, I think he answered, I was going to say China, and countries like Saudi Arabia and Australia involved in Afghanistan?
Yeah.
Maybe I'll listen off the air.
Well,
thanks, Joanne.
Yeah. Yes, thank you.
And once again, let me say the number. It's 503-231-8187. Please do get your calls in now.
Well, I mean, the blunt language is this is imperialism, colonialism, old imperialism, new imperialism, colonialism. As one of the callers pointed out, unfortunately, Afghanistan has the misfortune of, one, its geography, its location, because it's very strategically located, connecting, Central Asia with South Asia and then Southeast Asia.
Helping to surround Iran,
And also because of the U.S.-Iranian conflict and the Iranian-Pakistani conflict, the Iranian-Saudi conflict. One of our problems, Afghanistan's problem, is because of its diversity and its geography and location, and also because of its resources, as you pointed out, Linda, lithium, copper, gold. J.P. Morgan is already prospecting
oil
and gas. So it has a lot of resources that the whole world wants and needs, apparently, especially lithium and some of the other minerals. And it's very attractive to the international crime syndicates, especially the drug mafia from all over the world, in addition to the...
With regards to the poppy production, I mean, as just an observer, I've noted that everywhere the United States has gone to wage war or has a significant military presence, and I don't think it's any accident, there is an increase in the drug trafficking.
Yeah, well, the Golden Triangle,
out of Vietnam during
Central Asia.
So Afghanistan did not have this kind of poppy production before, but when you destroy agriculture and you encourage criminal extraction of dollars from the country, this is a good way for criminals to make a lot of money.
Yes, and those same criminals are the ones that the U.S. and NATO work with, because you need their so-called security agencies, you need their protection, you need their goodwill, and they can tell you, look, you don't bother me, and I can control and pacify this area for you. I can get rid of the Taliban for you. So the occupiers, the invaders in Afghanistan, who also use drones massively, drones are now universal almost, as you know. They're used everywhere, from detecting forest fires here in Oregon to bombing people, not just in Waziristan, but also in Afghanistan. This is the new imperialism. This is the new colonialism. And if subtleties won't work, the U.S. And allies have no problem using the most vicious instruments at its disposal and inflicting enormous amounts of pain and suffering. I've been to Gaza. I've seen Gaza, it is a vast prison, the degradation of the Palestinians, the butchery, the slaughter, the massive destruction on television— It simply boggles my mind why Americans are not outraged about what Washington is doing with their money and their trust in their votes.
Are you outraged, America? I know you're not the typical American out there listening to this station. You're our audience. But please do give us a call at 503-231-8187. What do you think we should be doing to, end U.S. involvement in the way it is in Afghanistan? Is there anything that we can do to be of real assistance to the people of Afghanistan as American citizens? That's one of the questions I think that should be on the table. Please call with your ideas and with your questions. Once again, it's 503-231-8187. And before I go back to the subject, I do want to let you know what's coming up on KBOO this morning at 7. You heard all of that already. At 9 on Law and Disorder, we'll hear a discussion on the application of international law to the current situation in Gaza. And then at 10, it's Air Cascadia with host Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoints, investigative news and radio with host Dennis Bernstein. And at 11, it's the Recovery Zone with host Stephanie Potter. And thanks to all of you KBOO members for your support, your continuing support, and for becoming a member of KBOO. If you haven't done that, you can certainly do that immediately just by using your computer to go to our homepage. There's a jar in the upper right-hand corner that says Donate Today. We appreciate any support that you give us. I do want to mention this. I think one of the most important things you said was, Professor Wahab, was that you think this has been an intentional underdevelopment of the nation, and I call it our policy to turn countries into failed states so mm-hmm. that the criminals mm-hmm. can have free flow at it. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things that I think is a really important discussion to have, because given that, how can Afghanistan get out of this problem? Will things like the Shanghai cooperation, other nations who see something in Afghanistan besides poppy production and a place to send military arms. But we do have two more callers, so I want to get right back to them. Harry, thank you. You're on the air now.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. I have two questions. The first question is, most of the Afghan people, where do they get their news source from? Do they get it from radio or the newspaper? Or how do most Afghan population get their...
Yeah. A second question? Or... Oh. Would you like me to answer the first one?
Yeah, answer the first one.
Actually, it's amazing. There's a very flourishing free press. When I first went there, there was only one television station, a government television station. Now there are about 50 television stations. When I first went there, there was not even a computer in the Ministry of Higher Education. And now it's estimated that 15 or 20% of the people have access to the internet. When I first went there, there was just one radio station owned by the government, and now you have about 140 radio, FM, AM stations, and there are literally hundreds of weeklies, dailies, and monthly publications. And you will be amazed, actually, to see, read, and hear what people have to say about, the country, about the government, their analysis, their critique. So, and the younger generation, as I said earlier, this is a country where 2/3 of the population is under 25. Many of the people have returned from abroad as refugees. Many of them, of course, are also leaving as we speak. But, they get the news from, these sources. They have very easy access to the internet.
You need to be literate to utilize the internet. And so I was saying this would create a real hunger for literacy among young people.
Yes, there is. And for foreign languages, for example. So in my program, for example, we offer a computer course was required, computer literacy. And, all of the 320 men and women loved it and worked very hard, those who didn't have computer literacy. So there are sources, and there is really reporters take risks, and quite a few journalists have been silenced in one way or another, either threatened, beaten up, or worse, assassinated. So they do get, you know, and people can read other languages. Of course, Persian is very easily readable. Many Afghans can read Persian, you know, and many can read, not many, but quite a few can understand English, French, or German, Japanese, you know, and many can understand Urdu, the Pakistani language. So there are sources, you know, and you'd be surprised how well-informed and how sophisticated a certain segment of the population is.
Well, you know, and you can have sophisticated analysis and thought without having literacy.
Power. Oh, yes.
Yeah, without having literacy, yes, as well. I mean, literacy is just what we give to be able to express the ability to have that intelligence.
Yeah, it's like my mother, yeah, you know, my sister. They're illiterate, but they understand the world.
Yeah, they can
know
have a very
what
sophisticated
the
analysis,
doing.
Yes.
They understand violence. They understand, you know, intrusion into people's lives. They understand prices. They understand a lot of things.
So, Harry, thank you for that. We have another caller. Do you have another question?
I have one more question. Here, does the media or the Afghan know about the 9/11 truth movement here in the United States? The U.S. government and the press refuse to talk about it. This is one of the few stations here in the country, who call-in stations, that will take a call about the 9/11 truth movement. I mean, come on, two planes and three buildings?
Yeah.
The Pentagon being hit, it's the largest building in the world is the Pentagon square footage. Why did it hit the side instead of the top of the building?
And just so it's interesting. Yeah. What do Afghans know about that? That
you
whole
know,
thing?
There was interesting. I mean, a lot of the Afghans, a little while after the 9/11 episode, and I have to point out that the vast majority of Afghans had nothing to do with 9/11, and that the decision to invade Afghanistan and occupy it was a product of the Project for the New American Century. That document, remember?
Yeah,
by Paul Wolfowitz,
it.
Dick Cheney, Rumsfeld, Khalilzad, and so forth, the Project for the New American Century. That decision to invade Afghanistan or attack either Afghanistan or Iraq was made in the summer of 2001 and not in September or October. People need to remember that. But anyway, some outfit went around and took these huge pictures of the two towers that were attacked and showed it to a whole bunch of people in Afghanistan. And they said, what is this? Most people didn't know this at all.
They
which
weren't
is
even
to
aware
say,
of it at all.
There were three buildings that were destroyed.
Yeah.
Well, yes,
Americans
but
think there was only two, but there was actually three buildings. One
right.
Just collapsed.
My
know?
Point is that when they showed these pictures to the Afghans, you know, so if they could identify this and what happened, the Afghans had no idea, which is to say a lot of Afghans had no idea about 9/11, and yet they're being collectively punished in terms of terror, bombing, murder, mayhem, starvation, you know, and maldevelopment.
Well, and now look at how many years later. Thank you, Harry. We're going to go on to our next caller.
Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
Hi, and Gordon, you're on the air.
Hi. You know, Palestine, the largest prison in the world behind the United States of America, plain and simple. You ever try to get out of this country, you will never get out of this country without a passport. And mm-hmm. They will never give you a passport unless they want to, and you follow within the guidelines, and you'll never leave this country with a pocket full of money. So this and Palestine are the two largest prison systems in the world. And
yes.
We got Afghanistan, Iraq, and Syria are just, you know. But really, I think the way to go with this is we have collective brainwashing and manipulation. It's worldwide. You've got, really, I think, one of the biggest architects of this is the man who owns Fox News and who is now trying to buy Time Warner. So, you know, we got to go to the top, and we need to start hanging these people for treason and murder and genocide and apartheid, and every single one of them is guilty. Every single one of them in every country are guilty of allowing the atrocities to go on without, you know, look at us backing Bronner's now wanting to back Israel and the genocide going on in Palestine. I mean, it's just criminal. And look at the drug trafficking. Who is the biggest drug lords in the world? Mm-hmm. Our federal government, John McCain, you know, these guys are drug lords.
Well,
man,
Gordon, thank
murderers.
You. Thank you for your perspective. I think, you know, I think I probably agree with you with most of this in terms of the difficulties around the world.
I think I would agree that
it all comes from us.
There's a lot of work to be done here, Gordon, in this country. I mean, you understand the facts and the figures. A third of Americans being in debt, some 60 million Americans really suffering, minimum wage, sub-minimum wage, 40% of Portland's kids not being able to graduate from high school, free lunches.
Yeah, but if you go this way and you look at the Afghanis and you look at the poor in Africa and stuff, the poor people here in the United States are rich.
Yeah, in a way. Yeah, someone will feed you. But and then in terms of the brainwashing, or what Chomsky would say, the manufacturing of consent, in consensus, these are things to deal with here. In other words, the injustices, the inequities, the distorted priorities, the manipulation by the ruling elite, the military, industrial, intelligence, and media complex in Washington. But this sort of is being exported, the consumerism, the mindless consumerism, the self-indulgence. I would agree with you that Karzai has a lot in common with Obama than with you and me. And so there's sort of an international class structure. The ruling clique in Afghanistan or in Iraq or in other places, in Yemen even, have more in common with the ruling clique in America or France or other places than with their own people. And that's why no Afghan official can walk the street alone without bodyguards. And no Westerner, and no Westerner in Afghanistan is free to walk the street, and we're not allowed to. So that sort of tells you the divide, both at the national and onto the international level. And I think the struggle over resources, gas, oil, minerals, and water pretty soon. These are international issues. These are, the inequities are international issues. And then we need to sort of build national movements and build eventually sort of a global movement for justice, for equity, for true democracy. This is what a good education should be doing, but I see a lot of miseducation and not very good education going on, even in this country.
I want to thank you, Gordon, Gordon, I want to thank you for your call. We've got another caller. I want to go ahead and go to them. Thank you for calling in with those points. I do think one of your most important was about propagandized, and I do think we have to figure out KBOO's one tiny little way of being able to have another voice out there. But, Lenin, famous from the Soviet Revolution, and a little bit outdated, he had a famous writing called What is to be Done? And that was about the situation in the world. What is to be done? And the answer that was basically given in that book is create public opinion and then seize power. And I think that creating public opinion is probably the most important part of that. And we're not very good here in the United States. Our most of our ways of creating public opinion have been seized and taken firmly in the hands of the imperialists. So, but let's go to our next caller. Don, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hey, thank you, guys. So this is firsthand knowledge. I've got a family member that had to walk away from the military. I guess their job is to identify and eradicate poppy fields and the manufacturing. Mm-hmm. So they had what they called like the biggest hit of their life. Mm-hmm. And they go to eradicate this field and this warehouse, and they're told that they're not allowed to. Now, this family member has been doing this for years.
Yes.
So they got very frustrated, and they said, you guys don't understand how big this is. Now, I was later talking to two other family members. I was not part of the conversation, but they said it was something connected to Mohammed Morsi, which I kind of recognize that name from the news. Mm-hmm. Later, I was talking to the family member that was directly involved, and they quit the military because their job is to identify and destroy these targets. Mm-hmm. And they were told they couldn't because it was too high priority. This person reassured me that all of that went out to be sold because they weren't allowed to bomb it, and it never got bombed. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And this person was the person that identified targets. I mean, this is firsthand knowledge. Yes. So that's how in bed everybody is. They're so in bed with each other.
Yes.
they're not even, it's all just, it's so fake. It's terrifying. It's just terrifying.
Exactly. I remember a 60-minute version with Steve Kroft. This was focused on the drugs in Afghanistan, and they walk with Steve Kroft walks with this general, I suppose, in the fields in Helmand, I think, and Steve Kroft turns to the general, the American, saying, "Why aren't you eliminating these things?" And the general looks at Steve Kroft and says, "Steve, we have to work with these people." The criminal class, whether they're drug lords, weapons smugglers, human traffickers, foreign aid mafia or the land mafia, they work hands and gloves with the occupying forces, just like any place else. You need these intermediaries. You need this predatory class in order to do your work for you. In other words, actually, American companies, whether it's providing, you need fuel, you need to move your troops, you need to secure this base. And the people who have militias, guns and weapons and people, are these Afghan criminals. So, and this has entrenched and strengthened the Afghan criminal class, the predatory class. The occupation and the invasion, in other words, have installed and protected and strengthened and empowered and equipped and so forth the most criminal elements in Afghan society, and we can't get rid of them. And now, with this recent, the most recent election, and Kerry's intervention, it's going to institutionalize that social political structure. That is to say, the idea is to have these, quote, government of national unity. In other words, you would have these, the ruling cliques and predatory elements from every ethnic group to be part of the government, and then rule the country. And they will continue. If you did not have a very high-level government involvement in the drug business or the human trafficking, it will not happen. Exactly. So it's all related. I mean, as I said, crime has been internationalized and gangsterization has been internationalized. And these criminals and predatory and gangster elements in different societies work together in order to prey on the vast majority of humanity throughout the planet.
Terrible. I have a picture of this family member in my living room, chumming it up with Ollie North.
Yeah.
And they're talking and laughing. My wife made me take it down. She says we're not allowed to have that in the living room.
I like your wife.
The same with child abuse. Yep. I mean, Afghanistan, unfortunately, child abuse, sexual child abuse, is very, very common. And a lot of times it happens in the press. Actually, the foreigners are guests. Where the children are dancing and so forth.
Well, and didn't we have one little part of our government get in trouble for actually hiring young boys to entertain adult troops?
Yes.
Yeah.
So,
The thing that I think is difficult about all of this, and thank you, Don, for your call, is that we, as the American public, well propagandized, often hear about these bad forces, these bad kinds of forces, but we're led to understand that that's something that comes out of Afghanistan naturally, and that we're over there trying to stop it, when I think it is once again essential to realize that we're really not trying to stop it, that the United States and NATO benefit from having a failed state in Afghanistan.
Yes, but also it's very racist and ethnocentric, to sort of essentialize the whole population. So, Laura Bush talking about liberating Afghan women, as if Afghan women were frogs, had no consciousness, no concerns, and they were not struggling, they were not doing anything.
Well,
this
when
is how.
I saw a whole project that's going on called Chime for Change, and it's an international organization to help women in countries like Afghanistan. Yeah. And in these concerts, they have women who I admire. I mean, I enjoy watching as singers and stuff in general. They have Beyonce and J-Lo, and they're wearing costumes that would be seen in a stripper area or something like that. You know, very high cut. They're dancing with their crotch towards the screen, the camera. Yeah. And I'm always surprised that they don't seem to realize that many, many of the women they would be supposedly liberating would be very offended. Very offended by the cultural expression that's being seen there. And that's something that we need to bridge these cultural differences, but it seems to be there's no apparent even knowledge of them. There gets propagandized here in this country a belief that all Afghani women would not want to wear a headgear, for example.
That's right. Or sometimes the best help is not to help, just to stay away out of people's business, let them struggle on their own and change their own conditions and map their own futures.
That sounds exactly right. Thank you, Zahir Wahab, for that. And you can tell by the music that we are coming to an end. I want to thank all of the callers. Thank you very much for bringing your points of views and your questions to the air. And, become a member as well. Make your voice felt here at KABU in the strongest way you can. And one of the ways you can do that is by becoming a member. Go to the computer to donate today on our homepage. And I want to thank our engineer, Steve, for all of his help with the callers. And once again, thank Professor Zahir Wahab. You're welcome. Please keep yourself informed about Afghanistan and take the actions you feel are right.
Transformed into a graveyard for empire again, a place where terrorists are born with every drone attack. A graveyard for the Midwest boys never coming back. A graveyard for society, a graveyard for ideals, a place to bury all the hearts of anyone who feels them at the meeting in Chicago. They'll talk of women's rights. They'll talk about the terrorists they've got within their sights. The terrorists abroad. The terrorists so near. The terrorists who...
I'm Monica Beamer.
And I'm Mike Crenshaw. We're KABU's new co-station managers. We're excited to be a part of the KABU community. We're starting a new weekly feature on Wednesdays at 5:45 p.m. News from the BU will give you an inside look into what's happening at KABU, including upcoming events, station news, special programming, and future goals and plans for the station.
Be sure to tune in this Wednesday and every Wednesday after the KABU Evening News for News from the BU, an insider look into your community radio station.
Good morning. It's just about 9:01. You're tuned to KBOO Portland. We have some public affairs programming to bring you this morning, starting with Law and Disorder. We'll hear a discussion on the application of international law to the current situation in Gaza. At 10 o'clock, it's Air Cascadia with host Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoints, Investigative News Radio with Dennis Bernstein. And at 11, it's The Recovery Zone with host Stephanie Potter. And once again, thank you, KABU members, for your generous support. If you're not a member, you can easily become one by going to kabu.fm on the web and clicking where it says Donate Today. Thanks for doing that. We're going to get right to Law and Disorder.
This